Good to see you and all those that are watching on campuses and on Facebook Live and maybe from heaven, who knows. So good to be with you and so honored to be a part of this series. You know, I recently heard a story of Muhammad Ali who hopped on an airplane to go to an event, and he's seated on the airplane, and you know, if you ever fly, the announcement comes over, you know, we're about to take off, and so we're going to need everyone to fasten your seatbelt and sit down, all that kind of stuff. And Muhammad Ali, he makes absolutely no movement, you know, nothing. And finally, a flight attendant comes over and says, you know, Mr. Ali, in order for this plane to take off, the regulations say that you have to do up your seatbelt. And Muhammad Ali looked at the flight attendant and said, Superman don't need no seatbelt. To which the flight attendant responded back, Superman don't need no airplane either. Well, just for the record, I'm not Superman, and neither are you, right? All of us, each of us, are kind of invited into this incredible opportunity that God gives to everyday, ordinary, all of us people, which is this invitation to live in a whole new way. It's salvation, it's freedom. As a matter of fact, this whole business of Christmas, all of the decorating, all of the celebrating, all of the lights, all of the giving, it's all to celebrate, it's all to signify this incredible gift that God gave to the world in Jesus, in the person of Christ. And actually, when Jesus, he comes as a baby, when he grows up, one of his first, the way he launches his ministries in Luke chapter 4, he kind of steps out in the temple to begin the thing for which he was sent, which is this. He says, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to say to captives, be released. He has sent me to open the eyes of the blind. He sent me actually to proclaim to everybody that can hear that this is the year where everybody goes free. He was on a freedom mission. And I get really excited when it comes to why Jesus came and this launching of his ministry and what it means on the earth, because I've been in the business of helping people and even myself trying to get myself out of oppression and into freedom. This is probably one of the hardest jobs on the planet. Sometimes when we gather at church and we kind of get all rawr, we can pretend as though this freedom business is some sort of Superman thing, that we become superpowered people. And that would be false. We're actually ordinary people that get invited by Jesus, who has power to set us free. I was recently, in January, I was in Haiti. I was visiting my Compassion-sponsored child. His name's Emerson and his mother, Jasmine, and kind of hearing their story. It's actually, it's really beautiful because they lived in a rural village. She was, the mother was just suffering after the earthquake from extreme poverty. The infrastructure of their village was damaged. They had no access to clean water. Things were not looking good. She overheard a conversation between two people in the village about a church in a town about 2 hours away that had a school for kids and a program where they fed them every day and they gave them access to medical care and all that kind of stuff. And she heard about this church that offered this program. And she thought to herself, remember talking to her, she said, I thought to myself, I wonder if it's true. I wonder if it's true. So one day she set out, walked 3.5 hours to get to that church through sort of all kinds of things to say, is it true? Do you guys actually operate this thing where you take kids who are suffering from extreme poverty and you give them an opportunity at a different life? And the pastor met her. Now, she's not a believer in Jesus. She hasn't met Jesus. She doesn't even understand about this church business. She just heard it was possible for her son to have a different life, and she made the walk. She said, is it true? The pastor said, it sure is true, and actually, we have space for your son. At the same time, somewhere else in the world, I'm like, you know, shopping for children. You know how you do that with your compassion. I'm looking for a kid the same age as my son. I happen to grab Emerson, and Emerson literally has access to a whole new way of life. And that's kind of this invitation that Jesus gives to his people. This salvation thing is this invitation to a new way of life. Now, what does it mean? It means that Emerson still has to do some stuff. They had to move to that place where that church was. They had to make some sacrifices. They had to figure out a different way to make this work, to kind of take this gift that had been given to them and actually make that gift work in their everyday life. They had to fasten their seatbelt to take off on that flight called freedom, called living a different way. And that is exactly the same thing that we get to do. Now, here's one of the things I've discovered is that sometimes we talk about freedom as an event. And sometimes freedom feels like an event. Sometimes freedom is an event. Sometimes freedom happens at a certain particular time. But one of the things that happens when we do that is we think it's this event that has happened instead of this invitation to live a new way. Freedom is not just one event that happens to you, it's an invitation that you get to actually live life in a new way. My friend Patricia, she talks about this. She was just loaded up with oppression. Oppression just had its grip on her life. Tons of, from her childhood and abuse and anxiety and addiction. I mean, it was kind of like name your oppression. She's suffering from that. And she had this dream in the middle of the night one time that kind of changed everything for her. She dreamt that she was in this pit, in a really, really big pit. She could see kind of up at the top of the pit. She said she was up to her shoulders in human sewage, just totally hopeless, despairing, stuck in her own crap. She said she looked up in the dream, and there her parents were. They were crying over her condition, praying that God would somehow help her. There were some friends that were up there going, "Oh man, Patricia, if only you could get out of the pit. You know, like we're here for you. No one can kind of help her." Then she said, kind of to add insult to injury, she could see Jesus come along this pit. She said he was dressed in his Sunday school best. You know, the white-robed Jesus with the sash and the blonde hair, because, you know, that's realistic. But anyway, so Middle Eastern men all have blonde hair. Haven't you been there? So anyway, so he's, you know, she said this Sunday school Jesus shows up on the edge of the thing, and she's thinking to herself, "Oh, great, now Jesus is here. It's like a crowd watching me in my own crap, stuck in oppression." And she said then she kind of took her breath in, because Jesus began to turn around and lower himself into the pit, and turns around and looks at her, like, you know, eye to eye. And she says to him, "Oh, great, now we're both in a pit." And she said Jesus looked back at her with the goofiest grin on his face. And she's like, "What are you so happy about?" And he said, "We're both in the pit, but I know the way out." And he reaches over in the dream and opens this trap door, and out goes all of the sewage. And Jesus looks at her and says, "Follow me." And he starts crawling through this way where there was no way. He starts to lead her in a new way, this exodus, this exit from oppression. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon him, because he's anointed to preach good news to the poor, to say to the captives, "Follow me." There's another way to do life. Now, one of the other mistakes, and this is really important, I want you to really know that Jesus has come to set us free. That's why he's come, and that actually he knows how to bring freedom in ways that we have not even thought of, ways that seem to elude us, ways that we cannot. If we could free ourselves, we would have done it already. We can't. Jesus offers freedom in a way that we can never even understand, and that's his business. That's why he came. That's what he does. But then there's this other side of things. There's this thing where oppression is not just something that happens outside of us, it's also something that happens inside of us. And one of the things I realized about oppression in my 23 years of helping people out of various oppressions and going through my own recovery process is that oppression loves to come back. See, you'll get free, you'll have a moment of revelation, you'll have one of those moments where you're like, "Whoa, there's a trap door." Like, you'll have one of those moments where you do up your seatbelt, you get on the plane, and you arrive at a new location. There'll be this moment of freedom, and that's exciting. I'm praying actually today that some of you will have one of those moments. It's amazing. But then actually what happens is, because we make that an event that happened to us instead of something that changes inside of us, oppression finds another way back in. Those of you who gave up smoking, for example, you'll understand the new discovery of French fries. Right? Right when you thought you had your coffee habit licked, you discovered a new drink they invented at Starbucks, right? You just can't, I mean, who can live without an eggnog latte? and on it goes. You thought you were free from an abusive relationship with your father, and then halfway through your marriage, you realized the same patterns emerged with your husband. Or you thought for some reason that you were over being, you know, licenses. You thought, I don't need to have those affairs. I don't need to have those affairs. But that blinking screen on your phone with those pornography images, just you couldn't help yourself. See, oppression will return. As a matter of fact, in the gospel, it's so clear that this is the case that Paul, the apostle, he's writing to the Christians and he says this. He said, it's for freedom that Christ set us free. That's in Galatians chapter 5. He says, it's for freedom that Christ set us free. This is good news, people. Jesus knows a way where there is no way. Jesus has possibilities to set you free. This is his intention. This is his mission. This is why he showed up on the scene. This is why Christmas is such a big deal, because Jesus came to set us free. That is absolutely true. And here's what often happens in churches all over the place and even in my own life is we just stop there. We just say, Jesus has come to truly set us free, full stop. But that's not what Galatians 5:1 says. There's not a full stop there. There's a comma there. Here it is. Christ has come to truly set us free, comma. So be free and don't let slavery come again. Don't let it back in. Now, Paul's talking to the church, so what he's saying is that not only is slavery possible to come back into your life or oppression coming in another color or a different way or another form, but actually even religion itself can be oppressive. Even the way in which if you're trying to like live up to a certain set of rules, or you're trying to please God, or you're trying to earn favor, or you're just trying to please other people, or there's some sort of pecking order in the church or any kinds of competition like that, even religion can be oppressive. So Paul is saying this oppressive thing, this thing, we're called to live lives of freedom. So I said to the Lord, because oppression is circular like that, because there are these moments of great freedom in our life and then we track along, you know, right when you thought you were over your drug addiction, you realize that you don't ever stop working. I mean, on and on this goes. Oppression comes in 1,000 different colors and 1,000 different ways to try to get back inside of you, to try to get back in a cycle, to try to restrict you, to try to conform you, to try to get you back into a restrictive place. You know, I preached on freedom and oppression in Haiti, where it's very, very oppressive. And, you know, in Creole, I was being translated. And the only way they could translate oppression, they didn't have a word for oppression. The closest word that translated into oppression from Creole is asthma. So for the first 5 minutes of the preach, every time I said oppression, everybody heard asthma. And I thought, wow, finally a practical sermon, right? How to get over your asthma, right? How to overcome your asthma. I mean, like, finally, Hades, breathing deeper. I thought, you know, probably half the congregation at least in Haiti was like, see, that's why we don't let women preach, you know, just that's what happens. They tell you how to get over your asthma. I mean, what's that got to do with it, you know? And I thought, you know, at first it was really, really funny, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized just how much like asthma oppression is. I mean, if you think about it, your asthma, by its definition, it restricts your oxygen supply. It tightens up your life. You can't breathe. It holds you in. It like squeezes your ability to live. And as a matter of fact, asthma, unchecked, will actually lead to death. And so will oppression. So this is, how do we begin to breathe deeply the freedom that God has for us? How do we begin not only to have moments of freedom, but to have that freedom be something that we live into, that we learn actually a new pattern of being? You know, interesting thing, Jesus, one of his mission statements is that he came to destroy the works of the devil. I like that. It's aggressive. I'm in the Salvation Army, so I like all things like rah, rah, rah. You know, like I think that would look good on my business card. What have you done? I'm a destroyer of Satan. You? Right? Like just like, I have come to destroy the works of the enemy, Jesus said. That's one of his mission statements. It's beautiful. It's so aggressive. And the word destroy, fascinatingly enough, it actually is a Greek image of a knitted sweater. And you know when you have something beautiful that's knit, but it's got a snag in it, and a little kid comes along and goes, oh, look at that snag, and pulls on it, and you're like, don't do that! Because if you keep pulling on that snag, what happens? The sweater unravels. And actually, that word, when Jesus said, I've come to destroy the works of the enemy, he actually, it means unravel. I have come to loosen. I have come to unravel the work of the enemy, which is the work of oppression. I've come to loosen you. I've come to unravel you. I've come to allow you to breathe in the gift that is freedom in your life so that you don't have to live in a restricted, constricted thing that leads to death. Oppression does not have to have the last words. I said to the Lord, how do we do it? Not just get free, but how do we stay free? How do we get into a place in our own lives, in our cultures, in our communities, where freedom actually is something we live every day, not just something we sing about or something we hope for or something we think is possible, but something actually that is really legit. And I felt like the Lord gave me a couple of keys over all these 23 years. I wanted to share a few with you, see if they might be helpful. The first step is to believe that it's possible. Now, I know that this sounds a little bit basic, but this for me has been life-changing because one of the ways I realized that oppression is coming back into my life is I look for those areas in my life that I have no hope for. I look for those situations in my life that I believe are impossible to change. I look for those areas in my life. I'm in this toxic relationship, but it's the best I can do. It will never change. That's oppression. Wherever we begin to come into agreement that this is impossible to change. Now, this can happen on a personal level. You know, this secret habit that I have, nobody even maybe knows about, but I can't stop doing it, and I can't get free because I can never tell anybody, and there's no good news. That's oppression. That oppression says, this anxiety that I live with, it's going to define me, it's going to restrict me, it's going to like constrict my life, and there's nothing that anyone can do about it. That's oppression. Whenever you come into agreement with a hopeless, despairing situation, you'll realize that's oppression. That's the enemy working. So the way to combat this on a regular, everyday basis is to start believing God, is to come out of agreement with oppression and into agreement with God. Now, I'm not saying like it's like magic. I'm not saying like, ta-da, you'll be free if you believe it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that's the first step to allowing that restriction of oppression to actually loosen over you. That's the way that we loosen that sweater. We start to believe what God says. Now, there's some incredible examples of this in Exodus chapter 1. You know, everybody thinks that Moses saved the Israelites. That's because men have been getting the credit for generations. Two women actually started the revolution in Exodus in chapter 1. You can read it. Their names are there. Two midwives who, even though Pharaoh told them to kill all the baby boys that were born to the Israelites, the scripture says they said no to Pharaoh and yes to God. They chose to believe it was possible for God to do something incredible, and then God did. This is the thing, is that that's how we begin to participate in freedom. Now, I just want to say real quick that this isn't always just the case in our individual decisions. I'll tell you, I was on a plane about 17 years ago. I read a book by Dr. Jeffrey Sachs called The End of Extreme Poverty. In that book, he helped the UN come up with its millennial goals. In that book, he says, in 30 years, it's possible, if people actually paid attention to this and contributed to this, in 30 years, we could end extreme poverty on the planet. I was sitting on a plane. I remember the day. I'm sitting on the plane. I'm reading this book. I'm halfway through the book, and it hits me. We could end extreme poverty on the planet. Now, I know I should have got it from the title. I know I should have got it from the back of the book. I know I do it halfway through the book, literally. I'm reading this thing for a couple hours, and then it hits me. We could end extreme poverty in 30 years. In my lifetime, I could be part of a generation that says extreme poverty is no longer a thing on the planet. And then it changed the way I thought about it. It changed the way I prayed for it. It changed the way I behaved. It changed my attitude about it. I started, hope started entering into me. And then at the same time that happened, I realized something else. I had believed up until that time in my life that it was impossible. I had believed that we couldn't end extreme poverty, which is a weird thing for a Christian to believe, since Jesus taught us to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. No one's dying of extreme poverty in heaven. Jesus told us to pray that. Jesus told us to work for that. Jesus painted a picture of a world where everybody had enough. I mean, and I had believed, even in the church, I was a leader in the church, and I had in my mind agreed with the oppression of extreme poverty to say, well, we'll do what we can, but actually, poverty has the final word. And on that day, in that plane, something shifted. Oppression loosened. Freedom expanded. And I started realizing that actually this was possible. It changed the way I talked about it. It changed the way I thought about it. It changed the way I explained it to my children. It changed everything. As a matter of fact, just about a month after that, I was watching this guy, Muhammad Yunus, receive a Nobel Peace Prize for this microcredit loan system he created in Bangladesh. I remember him accepting this prize. He said, I accept this Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of my grandchildren. He said, because I cannot wait for the day where I take them by the hand to the Museum of Extreme Poverty to show them what it used to look like. I want to live like that. People, that is how freedom not only comes one time, but that's how freedom comes on the earth. That's how freedom begins to have its way. What are you believing is impossible? Where are you in agreement with oppression? Where are you saying, well, this is the best I've got. This is how I have to stay. And how can you come out of agreement with that and come into agreement with the possibilities of God's kingdom come? That's step number one. You ready for number two? Don't be afraid. That's the step. Don't be afraid. Do not be afraid. Now, here's the deal. Exodus chapter 1, brilliant. These midwives decide to come out of agreement with oppression, to come into agreement with God. They're no longer more scared of Pharaoh than they are of anything else. They come out of agreement. Now, I'll tell you about my friend Estelle. She's about 72 years old. She's a Christian lady in my first church. She loves Jesus, you know, and one time I was looking at her because it was worship time, and she looked like she was having, something was happening to her, even physically. She looked like she was in pain. I was like, at the end of the service, I said, Estelle, are you okay? Is everything all right, you know? She said, well, no, it happens every Sunday. I said, what? She said, well, the music is on, and I feel like, you know, it says, like, I love you, Jesus. And she said, actually, what happens is I want to, like, lift my hands. She said, I want to just raise my hands. I want to kind of be free to worship Jesus, but she says, but then I look to the right of me and I see these old people looking at me thinking, ooh, she thinks she's kind of cool, look at her. And then I look to the left of me and I see these young people and I think, oh, what will those people think of me? Like, oh, it's an old person trying to be cool. And then she said, then I look up at you and I think, if I put my hands up, she's going to ask me to do something more in the church, you know. And she said, by the time I get done looking around, she said, the song's over and I missed it. Now listen, this is just a 72-year-old lady named Estelle suffering from a spirit of fear, suffocated by what other people might think, or what this might mean, or what this might look like to somebody else, or what this might mean for suffocated, a spirit of asthma, oppression, just tying her up. Now that's just one tiny area of her life. I thought to yourself, if you can't be free when you're in the company of other believers in a church during some moving music, oh my gosh, we have a spirit of fear, right? We have stuff to do, people. We have stuff to do. There's some things that need doing. There's some freedom that people need in the earth. There's 48 million people who are slaves right now who need some free people to come set them free. Now, you can't even raise your hands in worship or tell somebody about Jesus or pray for someone when God instructs you to. If you can't respond like that, you're suffering from fear. And this is what Jesus says. Read every Christmas story you can read, all the Gospels. Every time God encounters his people, this is what he says. Do not be afraid. Why are we so afraid? Why are we so afraid? Fear is the currency of oppression. And this is what I read in Exodus 1. It blew my mind. I read this. The Israelites were oppressed because they were afraid of the Egyptians. But listen to this. Pharaoh, because he was afraid of the Israelites, oppressed them. That's when it dawned on me. If you are motivated by fear, if you are using fear as a basis for your decisions, you will either be oppressed or you will be an oppressor. Fear is the currency of oppression. So I said to the Lord, okay, we live in a culture of fear, so this is going to be tricky. Everybody's afraid. We're taught to be afraid. Even as little kids, we're afraid of strangers. We're afraid of family. We're afraid of people who look like us. We're afraid of people who don't look like us. We're afraid of people who don't live here. We're afraid of people who live here. I said, fear is everywhere. How do we combat a spirit of fear and a culture of fear? And the Lord reminded me of this little story with my friend Flower. Flower was a street person. She'd been sold as a little kid into sexual servitude. She had a terrible heroin addiction. She had been bullied, tormented. She had a particular pimp who was a bully in her life that tortured and tormented her. And the trauma of that experience kind of remained with her. So she had this glorious encounter with Jesus where she was set free. I mean, in like sort of those epically beautiful ways where God just, boom, does something miraculous and you're like, wow. And then she began the journey through the trap door of the pit that she had been in. And she had to get her freedom, work it out in her everyday life. And one of the things that kept happening was this bully guy that was real life kept showing up in her dreams, kept coming and tormenting her, even in prayer times. One time I was praying with her, and this bully appeared in the prayer, you know, for her. She said, I don't want to pray anymore. I said, what do you mean you don't want to pray anymore? She said, he's here. He's in the prayer. He's saying terrible things. He's telling me when I get back here, this is what he's going to do to me, and blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, I feel like enough of your life has been spent enslaved to this guy. Like, I feel like enough space, he's taken enough space and time and energy. I feel like it's time to kind of say, you can't have my prayer life. You can't have this space anymore. Like, I feel like this is a time for some freedom. She said, okay, how do we do that? I said, well, this is just an idea, but are you willing to try it? I said, let's invite Jesus to show up in your prayer. This is a crazy idea that Jesus is in prayer, but yeah, let's invite Jesus to show up. So let's like go to the place where he's tormented. Go to that place right now. Instead of running away and pretending like it didn't happen, instead of avoiding prayer or avoiding those places where that thing is, I said, let's invite Jesus to come. And we just said a prayer. We said, Jesus, please, would you come right now, right to that place where that bully is right now? So Flower said she would do it. So she gets there and then she starts killing herself laughing, which I thought was really inappropriate because we were praying. I said, what could possibly be funny in this situation? I'm like, what are you laughing at? She said, well, Jesus showed up. I said, that's awesome. I said, where did Jesus show up? She said, oh, he showed up right in front of me. I said, that's awesome. That's where I wanted him to show up. You know, like that's because that's what his word says, that he's like a shield, that he protects the oppressed, that he stands in front of them, that he's like a fortress, a strong tower where they can go in and be safe. He's like, he goes before us, the scripture says, and behind us so that the fiery darts of the enemy cannot consume us. I said, this is awesome. That's what I love about Jesus. He shows up in front. And she said, oh, that's not what I'm laughing about. I said, oh, what is it? She said to me, well, let me put it to you this way, Danielle. She said, I am hugging his left calf. She looks at me and she says, he was way bigger than I expected. And then she starts killing herself laughing as she describes this tormenting bully that had filled her life with such fear, had restricted her life in so many ways. She said, he's running away from the presence of Christ. Jesus said it like this, perfect love casts out fear. It's not so much that we're a people who say, oh, we're not afraid. We don't live in denial. That's not faith. It's not so much a situation where we're going to be able to live in a life that's fearless. That's impossible. We live in today's world. This is a fear-based culture. Fear is going to be something that confronts us every day. But how we actually don't participate in a spirit of fear is we invite God's presence. We invite Jesus himself to be present, confronting those fears, to be present with us, to help us push through those fears, to be present with us, to help us actually in the midst of those fears. It's not to pretend. It's not to deny. It's not to avoid. It's to confront with the presence of Christ. You do not have to be afraid. This is the other thing the Lord says every time he says that. He says, because I'm with you. I'm with you. He's with you. He's on your side. He's come to set you free. He's come to release you from an asthmatic, oppressive condition. Here's number three, real quick. This starts now, and it starts with you. Jay Leno once said he would do anything for the perfect body except diet and exercise. Got it? Freedom does not come tomorrow, and it does not come with somebody else. Freedom comes now. freedom as an aspect of salvation, you were to ask God, you know, when is it the right time to be saved? When is it the right time to get out of oppression? When is it the right time to be released from fear? When is it the right time to receive peace? When's the right time to be forgiven? You know what God says? Now. Right now. Today is the day. That's what the scripture says. But you read that every day. That means today's the day. Every day. Today is the day. Not tomorrow. Listen, I have never met someone who quit smoking at the end of a pack. It's always in the middle. It is always in the middle of the pack. It's always in the moment where you feel the conviction, where you realize this is the time, this is the moment, this is my now. This is the eternal now of God. There is never a better time for you than right now. I'm telling you, at the end of the weekend will not be better. Monday will not be any better than this afternoon. This is the day. Today is your day. Now is the time. Freedom is always an eternal present tense. It's now. You're being set free now. You can be free now. Freedom can begin to happen in your life today. This is your moment. If you were waiting for a sign, this is it. Be free. Be free. Start now and start with yourself. And the final one's a really, really good one. Never, ever, ever, ever give up. If you don't realize that freedom is a fight, then let me help you. Freedom is a fight. Do you know that the Israelites, it took them, experts suggest, about a month and a half just to cross the Red Sea? There's 1.5 million people crossing the Red Sea, that part from one part of the desert to the other part of the desert through the muddy bottom of the water. It took them 1.5 months. You ever read that account and all the people get to the other side and they start complaining? And we read that part, we just go, what is with those complainers? They just walked for 1.5 months. And they didn't stop walking. I mean, it was like a Tough Mudder of epic proportions. They just like kept on going. They got to the other end. They're like, now we're going to die. And the reason why they're saying now we're going to die is because they just might die. It felt like that because they were tired and their muscles were sore. And this was difficult. And freedom takes a long, long time to actually walk into. Oppression is not something that just you're removed from. Oppression has to be removed from you. Jesus came that he might destroy the works of the enemy in your life and set you free. This is some good news, people.